It's true, but still my chest feels a whole lot lighter. I knew he'd come over, even though my mom told him not to. I don't want AJ to see me like this, but I'm dying for him to wrap his arms around me and kiss my forehead and tell me to stop thinking so hard. He'll tell me to talk to him, and I will, because all he has to do is say those words, and my mouth seems to kick into gear before my brain can stop it. I start combing my fingers through my hair, hoping I can force it to comply with gravity. It isn't AJ, honey. It's Haley. Haley. Her name hits me like a punch in the gut. I haven't seen Haley or any of the eight since I left the cafeteria last Friday, and none of them know what happened after I did. I'd practically forgotten about our fight. My whole face ignites with the thought, and I fall onto my bed and bury my face in my pillow. I can't deal with this right now. She looks pretty intent on coming upstairs, Mom says as she sits on the edge of my bed. She even brought flowers. Flowers? Why? She didn't do anything wrong. Mom starts rubbing my back. Let her come in, Sam. Hear what she has to say. Who knows? Maybe she'll cheer you up. I don't want to cheer up. I want to see Caroline. I want her to not be dead so I can not be crazy. I can tell Mom's not letting up, so I give her a fine whatever as I climb out of bed. I stand in front of the full-length mirror, pulling myself together. Haley has always been my favorite, Mom says as she leaves the room. A few minutes later, Haley walks in with her head bowed low. Hi, Samantha. She hands me a bouquet of cheery-looking flowers. Thanks, you didn't need to do this. I bring the bouquet to my nose. The scent reminds me of Sue's garden, and I'm taken aback by the wave of sadness that passes over me when I think about sitting out there, talking about Caroline last Friday night. I miss her. Are these from you, or from all of you? Haley understands what I'm really asking, and I know the answer before she even says a word. I can tell by the way she bites her bottom lip and shuffles her foot on the carpet. She's not here as the group's representative. Just me. She glances around my room. I'm so sorry. You stood up for me, and I didn't do the same for you. Twice. It's okay. Wow, it's been months since I was in your room. Why is that? She asks, changing the subject. I don't know, I say, but it's not true. The last time she was here, we were preparing for the Valentine's Day fundraiser, and my floor was covered with red roses and pink ribbon and sappy love notes. I'd forgotten how cozy it is in here, and the paint is really pretty. She walks over to the collage on my wall, runs her fingertip along the words "The Crazy Eights," and studies the photos. Wow, is this really us? Haley asks. We were so sweet and happy and... we look like we genuinely liked each other. She lets out a laugh. I remember thinking I was the luckiest person in the world to be part of this group. When did we change? I don't know, but I'm starting to think we can't change back. There's a long pause. Actually, I did stand up for you. It was a little late, but I hope it still counts. You did? She nods. And then I chased after you. What? No. That welcome sense of relief pops like a balloon. Now my mind is racing as I step through everything that happened in the minutes after I left the Crazy Eights in the cafeteria. I went straight to my locker. Caroline was there. She touched my face and told me she'd heard everything. We talked. When she disappeared, I followed her. I yelled her name through the corridors. Oh, God. Haley saw me talking to... nobody. She knows. We all got in a huge fight after you left the cafeteria. I told Caitlin she owed you an apology, but you know her. Alexis sided with her, of course, even though she looked a little unsure about it. What did you see? And Olivia... Haley rolls her eyes. She could have come with me to find you, but, well, she didn't. What did you see? I try to think of a way to ask her without really asking. "Why didn't you tell me this on Friday?" I ask, my voice shaking. Haley plops down on my bed and leans back on her hands. "I couldn't find you," she says. I sit next to her and let out a sigh of relief. "You couldn't?" "No, I went straight to your locker, but you weren't there." "Huh," I say. "You're leaving us, aren't you?" She folds her legs underneath her and sits up straight. "I wouldn't blame you if you did, and you have a boyfriend now, so it would probably happen anyway, but..." "Haley," I hug her. She squeezes my shoulders so hard, it's like she's being pulled underwater, and I'm the only thing she has to keep her afloat. "I don't know what I'm going to do yet, but if I do leave, you can always come with me." She pulls away, shaking her head. "I'm not sure I could do that." I know what she's thinking. Leaving the AIDS changes everything. No more lunches, no more concerts, no more sleepovers or parties. We wouldn't be included in Caitlin's grand plans for junior prom, or invited to stay at the hotel in the city afterward. The rest of our high school experience would be completely different from the one we expected. Or worse, the remaining AIDS would give us the same treatment they gave Sarah. We'll be shunned in the halls. They'll start rumors about us, just in case the rest of our classmates consider feeling sorry for us, or taking our side instead of theirs. "How can I help you at school tomorrow?" she asks. It might be the nicest thing she's ever said to me, but I honestly don't know how to answer her. I can't face the AIDS. I can't go to Poet's Corner. I'm too embarrassed to talk to AJ right now, and my heart can't handle the idea of going to my locker multiple times throughout the day, looking for Caroline at every stop, knowing I won't see her once. My eyes start to well up, and I swallow a gulp of air. "Actually, you can do two things." I walk over to my desk and grab my backpack. "You know my combo. Would you get all my books out of my locker and meet me at yours before first period tomorrow?" "All your books?" she asks. I nod. Haley throws my backpack over her shoulder. "No problem. What's the second favor?" "Will you please start calling me Sam?" Lock myself inside. I'm not sure I can get through the entire week without accidentally running into any of the AIDS or the Poets, but since I couldn't talk my mom into homeschooling me for the rest of the year, that's the plan for now. I drive around the student lot a few times until I can park on a 3. Then I cut the engine and stare at the digital clock, giving myself just enough time to make it to Haley's locker and then to class. When I arrive, Haley hands me my overstuffed backpack, and I hug her before I take off for first period. For the rest of the day, I take circuitous routes to each class and arrive right as the bell rings. As soon as each class ends, I bolt for the door and head straight for the nearest bathroom. At break, I go to the library and eat a power bar in the biography section. Now I see what Olivia meant. This is an excellent place to make out, or otherwise go unseen. At lunch, I head to the pool and swim laps, which turns out to be the highlight of my day. I don't even wear a cap, and I don't race. I swim freestyle in slow, precise strokes up and down the lane, blocking out all the thoughts, including lyrics and poetry. I concentrate on the peaceful silence and savor the smell of chlorine. My hair is still damp as I'm heading to fifth period, so of course that's when I spot AJ walking toward me. My stomach knots up as I duck into a row of lockers and lean against the far wall, hiding my face in my hands like a little kid, assuming, I suppose, that if I can't see him, he can't see me either.
"Sam."
Crap. My hands fall to my sides as I look up at him. "Hi."
"Hi."
I can tell he has something to say and that he's nervous about it, because in my peripheral vision, I can see his right hand, thumb, and forefinger pressed together, strumming lightly on the side of his jeans.
"Are you okay?"
he asks. I shake my head. Then I fix my gaze on his shoes and bite the inside of my lip 3 times hard. AJ keeps his distance, but I wish he wouldn't. I want to tell him everything. And then I want him to slip his hands around my back and wrap me in his arms like he did on campus last Thursday night. I visualize his mouth on mine, wordlessly telling me that it's all okay, and that he still wants me, broken brain and all. But it's not fair to expect that from him. What's he going to do? Tell me he thinks that it's kind of cute that I fabricated an entire person? How was open mic night? I ask, looking up, hoping to lighten the mood and force him to give me that slow smile of his. It's somewhat effective. The tension's still there, but now so is that dimple. It's all I can do not to kiss it.
Sydney and Chelsea drove everyone into the city, he says. Abigail, Cameron, and Jessica did the Raven. They got through the first 9 stanzas. Jessica said she totally screwed up, but I'm sure it didn't matter. It sounds like they blew everyone away. Sid read something, too. They wanted to perform their pieces for us today, but then you didn't show up.
He didn't go to open mic. You didn't go on Friday?
No. How could I go after?
He catches himself and changes course.
I couldn't go without you.
You should have gone, I say plainly. And then I start to panic, wondering what he said to the others. You didn't tell anyone about me, did you?
What?
The question clearly catches him off guard.
Of course not. I told them your car wouldn't start. That's why we didn't make it to the city.
We? Are we still we? Thanks. Please don't say anything, okay? He's watching me, waiting, I imagine, for an explanation of some kind. And he deserves one. But I can't stand the way he's looking at me right now. His eyes not only full of questions, but also full of pity. He didn't look at me this way 3 days ago. Look, I want you to know everything, I say. But it's hard for me. I've never told anyone but Kara. It starts to slip off my lips, and it's too late to take it back. I hope he didn't hear me. But he did. It's all over his face. I've got to get to class, I say as I push past him into the crowd, head down, walking away as quickly as I can, and kicking myself for saying her name. By Tuesday afternoon, I've become pretty skilled at sneaking around and avoiding people. Caitlin and Alexis were heading my way between first and second, and I started to panic. But then a group of guys on the lacrosse team walked up to them, and that was all I needed to creep by without them ever noticing me. Sydney tried to talk with me after U.S. history, but I pretended I didn't hear her and sped off for the pool. Olivia and I made eye contact a few times during trig, but I bolted for the door as soon as the bell rang. I haven't seen Haley since she gave me my backpack yesterday morning. Even though I'm avoiding all of them, I check my texts obsessively. 5 from Haley, 2 from Alexis, and 1 from Olivia, all saying pretty much the same thing. You okay? Coming to lunch? We're worried about you. Sorry about Friday. We miss you. None from Caitlin, and 1 from AJ. I don't know what to say. I can't decide how to reply to any of them, so I don't. I hang out in the bathroom near my 5th period class, watching the time on my phone, and I head for the door with less than a minute to spare. I've only taken 2 steps into the corridor when I spot AJ standing a few feet away, almost as if he's waiting for me. He starts walking and there's nowhere to hide. Then he stops looming over me, blocking my way.
You never read the poems in Caroline's corner, did you?
I shake my head. I have no idea what that is. He reaches for my hand and places the key inside my open palm. Then he closes my fingers around the thick, braided cord.
Go to the back right corner, he says.
He walks away. Caroline's corner? My legs are shaking, and I feel lightheaded as I open the door to my classroom and slide into my desk. I stuff the key under my leg so no one will see it. But during class, I hold it in my hand, running my thumb back and forth over its sharp edges and deep grooves, thinking about that room.
I'm not sure I can handle going downstairs all alone. I've always been with the group or with Caroline. But then I remember that's not true. Caroline didn't guide me that first time. I followed them, but I was completely alone. I brought myself down those stairs and into that room. That's when I start to understand the connection. The article I read last Friday night flashes in my mind. She loved writing poetry, the quote from Caroline's mom had said. Caroline was a poet. After 6th, I don't hide in bathrooms or beeline straight for my next class. Instead, I slowly make my way through the crowd, keeping my head up, returning hellos and what's ups from the people I pass, and walk to the theater entrance. I've got such a tight grip on the key, I can feel the notches leaving tiny impressions in my palm. The theater isn't empty. A drama class is rehearsing a play. But no one notices me climb the stairs, creep past the grand piano, and slip behind the curtain. I open the narrow door and close it quickly behind me, waiting to be sure no one saw or followed me. Then I step down. The air feels thicker and it smells dank, like dirty socks and mold, but I breathe deeply and take it all in like I'm experiencing it for the first time. I let my fingers skim the dark gray walls as I walk down the hallway, feeling the adrenaline pumping through my veins, recognizing how terrified I am right now, and forcing myself to experience every sensation, as if I need to prove to myself I can do this, that I no longer need her help. Inside the janitor's closet, I push the mops to one side, and the door squeaks as I pull it toward me. I look around at the black ceiling and the black floors and the black walls that hardly look black because they're covered with so many scraps of paper. The stool is where it always is. The guitar stand is in the corner, but it's empty now. I flip the closest lamp on, and then I lock myself inside. Pass it on. I look around, taking everything in the way I always do. The first time I was alone down here, I traversed the room, stopping randomly to read, returning to the poems I liked the most. I remember the sense of calm that washed over me when I finally found the lyrics to AJ's song, and the joy I felt as I read Sydney's fast food wrappers. I spent hours reading a decade's worth of poetry, written by people who graduated long ago. My eyes were burning from fatigue by the time I sat on the couch and began writing something of my own. When I left that day, I was in awe of every person who'd ever stepped foot in Poet's Corner. Now I take slow, measured steps toward the low bookcase in the right corner and flip on the lamp so it illuminates the wall. I never made it over here that first day, and over the last few months, I don't recall planting any of my own poetry here. If I had, I might have noticed what made this spot so unique. Unlike the other walls in Poet's Corner, everything here is written on the same lined three-hole punched paper and penned in the same handwriting, each letter perfectly shaped, each word perfectly spaced. Next to the lamp, I notice a wooden pencil box. I pick it up, turning it over in my hands, running my fingertip over the intricately carved swirls and waves. On the lid, I see three letters. C-E-M. I return the box to the bookcase and slowly peel it open. The notebook paper inside looks rumpled, and with shaking hands I remove it from its home and unfold it along the creases. It's not a poem. It's a letter. My breath catches deep in my throat when I realize it's written in the exact same handwriting I see on the wall in front of me. Dear Mr. B, you're going to think that what I did was your fault. It wasn't, and this room didn't do anything wrong. In fact, it saved my life for a long time. You created a place for me to go and helped me fill it with words and people I could trust. It was the kindest, most generous thing anyone has ever done for me. When I was inside this room, I was happy. If I could have captured how I felt on Mondays and Thursdays and carried it around in my pocket for later use, I would have. Believe me, I tried. You don't owe me anything more. but I hope you'll consider honoring this last request. Words are beginning to gather here. Just think of what these walls could look like if everyone who needed this room found it. Can you picture it? I can. Here's my key. Pass it on. Love, C. My hand instinctively goes to the cord around my neck, and I squeeze it in my fist. Caroline's corner. That's why Mr. B leaves the theater door open when AJ asks him to. Why he keeps this room a secret. Why he pops in every once in a while to vacuum and empty the trash. He knew Caroline. He built out this room for her, hid the door and camouflaged the lock to keep it a secret. She asked him to pass the key along, and he honored her last wish. He's been doing it ever since she died. Still gripping her letter in one hand, I grab the edge of the bookcase with the other. My knees aren't feeling too stable right now. Caroline Madsen started Poet's Corner. I take a step closer and brush my hand along the pages, as if I'm introducing myself for the first time. These are her poems. I read the titles and skim over the first lines, but some of them are placed too high, and I can't see the words from here. I walk to the front of the room, grab the stool from the stage, and bring it back to the corner, standing on top of it so I can get a closer look. On the highest point of the wall, I spot a poem titled Insecurity, and I read it to myself. Then I move to the next one called Alone in the Dark. And the next one, which is untitled, but begins with the words, Alliteration is alarmingly addictive. They're beautiful and hilarious, and the more I read, the more I cry, and the harder I laugh. But something doesn't feel right, and it's not until I'm halfway through her fourth poem that I realize what it is. I start reading aloud. As I begin reading her fifth poem, I arch my back and square my shoulders, standing taller, reading louder and stronger and clearer. And it feels good to speak her words, to listen to them come to life again, even if there's no one else around to hear how incredible they are. I read the rest of them the same way, in a loud, booming, confident voice, the way I imagine she would have wanted it. I've read more than 50 poems, and finally there's only one left. It's placed low on the wall, closest to the wooden pencil box, and there's something about the way it's mounted, with the black paint still exposed, acting like a thin frame, that makes me wonder if it's special somehow. It's called Every Last Word. I read to myself this time. These walls heard me when no one else could. They gave my words a home, kept them safe. Cheered, cried, listened, changed my life for the better. It wasn't enough, but they heard every last word. I cover my mouth, tears streaming down my face. It's written in threes. I read it again, out loud this time, even though my voice cracks and I have to stop after every other line to catch my breath. Sometimes I stop because I want to let the meaning of a word or phrase sink deep into my skin. But I keep going, crying harder as I read that final line. This was her last poem. And I realize that Caroline did bring me here, in her own strange way, to these people, to this room, knowing how much I needed this place. This room changed her life. And it's just beginning to change mine. I picture Sydney sitting alone in fast food restaurants, writing the funny things she reads to us, and the deeper thoughts she never shares. And Chelsea writing poem after poem about the guy who broke her heart. Emily sitting at her mom's bedside, watching her slip away, and trying to hold her here a little longer. AJ, propped up against his bed, playing his guitar, and trying to find the perfect words to match the notes. Cameron, watching his parents fall apart and trying not to do the same himself. Jessica and her booming voice in a tiny body, full of contagious confidence. And Abigail, whose poems are deep and astute, who had me at as if. Now that I know her better, her poetry no longer surprises me.
They're my friends. And I realize I know a whole lot more about them than they know about me. My next step is so clear. I leap off the chair and head for my backpack, feeling inspired to write for the first time in 4 days. I reach inside for my yellow notebook, because when Caroline was part of my life, she made me stronger, better, and happier. And that's the part of myself I need to reconnect with right now. I sit on the orange couch with my feet folded underneath me. The pen feels solid in my hand, and when I bring it to the paper, I'm relieved to feel the words flowing out like someone turned on the spigot. And before I know it, I filled the page with a poem for Caroline. It voices what she means to me, and how much I miss her, and why this room of hers matters, not just to me, but to everyone who's ever found it. And while it doesn't say it in so many words, it's also a poem for my new friends, promising that from now on, I'll be a lot braver with my words than I was before. Way too much. I close my notebook, and for the first time since Friday afternoon, I smile. It feels good. As I gather my things, I check the time on my phone. It's 4:18. I've been down here for more than 2 hours. Before I leave, I walk to the closest wall and run my hand along the brown paper bags and candy wrappers, the ripped-up scraps of paper and post-it notes, the napkins and receipts, thinking about all the people who have spent time in this room. Every person with a poem on this wall has a story to tell. I need to know more. I feel that familiar swirl start to build inside me, that craving for information and more information. My breathing speeds up and my fingers start tingling. I want to know every single person's story, and I start to feel excited by the idea of researching each one until I've pieced it all together. And then the swirl stops as quickly as it started. I don't need to know hundreds of stories. I only need to know 7. I've never asked any of them to tell me how they found Poet's Corner. I never asked Caroline. I never even asked AJ. AJ. I flip off the last light and race back up the stairs and into the student lot. My mind needs music, and I start to turn on In the Deep, but then I spot Grab the Yoke and choose it instead. I think about that day I first drove around with AJ, telling him how I named my playlists. He asked about this one. I told him how I sometimes wanted to fly the whole mess into the sea. And when I said the words, he looked at me like he was worried I might actually do it. Did my words remind him of Caroline, the founder of his beloved poetry club? She grabbed the yoke. My mind is on overload and my stomach is in knots as I throw the car in reverse, peel out of the student lot, and make the turns that lead to AJ's house. At the top of his driveway, I pull the emergency brake hard and scramble out of my car. The wind is picking up, whistling through the trees and stinging my cheeks, and I tighten my jacket around my body as I climb the stairs. I start to knock, but then I hear AJ's guitar coming from the other side of the door. It's too faint to make out the song, but I can picture him with his fingers pressed into the strings, forming chords, sliding up and down along the neck. I knock before I lose my nerve. The music stops, and a few seconds later he opens the door. Hi. He looks surprised to see me. Hi. I lift the cord over my head and hand it to him. Thank you, I say. He stuffs it into the pocket of his jeans. I look down at my shoes. We're both silent for a long time, me trying to muster up the courage to say what I came here to say, and him probably trying to figure out the fastest way to get a psychotic girl off one's porch. I stand up straighter, cementing my feet in place, and looking right at him. I found her corner. I bite my lip to keep my chin from trembling. I was kind of hoping you'd tell me more about her, more about that room and how you found it, and how you got the key. He opens the door wider.
Come in, you're freezing.
Nope, just terrified. I haven't been inside his house since that day I drove him home,
when he taught me how to play guitar, and I learned all about Devin. I step inside and drop my car keys on the entry table where I left them last time. And that's when it hits me. I jumped out of the car without checking the odometer. For a split second, I consider going back outside, but AJ is already walking toward his room. He looks over his shoulder, sees me hesitating, and gestures for me to follow him. I force myself to walk down the hallway, trying to think about him and nothing else, ignoring the intense urge I'm feeling to sprint back to the car and park correctly. Last time, when he closed the door behind us, I didn't know where to go or what to do. But this time, I walk straight to his bed and sit on the edge. I'm relieved when he sits next to me. He leans back on his hands, looking serious. Or maybe he's still freaked out. I can't really tell.
"What do you want to know?"
he asks. I take a deep breath and blow it out slowly. "Everything," I say. The small smile that forms on his lips makes me relax a bit.
"Mr. B told me the whole story when he gave me the key at the end of last year. He met Caroline when she was a sophomore. One day during lunch, he opened the door to the storage room next to the cafeteria and found her hiding in there all alone. It took some doing, but eventually she admitted it wasn't the first time. She had been eating there every day since the middle of her freshman year.
I picture her in one of her funny t-shirts, eating a sandwich while nestled among mop buckets and dustpans, and I want to cry, or punch something, possibly both at the same time.
I guess people were mean to her. She told him she didn't have any friends, and she was too embarrassed to eat alone in the quad, so she ate alone in the storage closet because she couldn't think of any place else to go.
My heart sinks deep in my chest. I remember saying almost the same thing to Shrinksu at the beginning of the school year. She asked why I wouldn't leave the Crazy Eights. I said I didn't have anywhere else to go.
Caroline and Mr. B became friends. He started bringing his lunch and joining her. At some point, she told him about her poems, and eventually she let him read some of them. She told him about this crazy idea she'd had to start a secret poetry club. Mr. B didn't think it was so crazy. He showed her a room underneath the theater that the drama department hadn't used in years. He installed the lock, hid the seams with paint, and moved some furniture inside. Caroline started filling one corner with her poetry. Over time, she met a few people she felt she could trust. She told them about the room, and by the end of the year, the other walls were filling up too. I guess she wasn't the only one who needed a place to go.
I came over to AJ's house today because I needed to know what brought him to Poet's Corner. And when he says that last part, things begin to fall into place. My eyes well up. "You needed a place to go," I say, and he nods.
"Emily and I had freshman English together. It was still really hard for me to talk in class, and she caught me doing my strumming on my jeans thing. She asked me about it. Eventually, she brought me downstairs."
"AJ," I whisper. I wipe my eyes, but all I really want to do right now is throw my arms around his neck and kiss him like I've done so many times over the last few weeks. But I'm so afraid of what will happen if I do. Will he push me away? Will he tell me it's over? I don't want to lose him, and I can't tell if I already have. I wish he'd touch me. My heart starts racing, my hands feel clammy. The thoughts are gathering and swirling, and I start panicking. Why won't he touch me? And then, as quickly as they began, the thoughts stop, completely. Inside my head, it's eerily quiet, and I know what I need to do. Caroline's been giving me words, and they've worked, but they were never her words. They were always mine. My words got AJ to let me into Poet's Corner, both times. When I told him how I named my playlists, he paid attention and wanted to know more. When we were at the pool that night, he begged me to talk to him. When I finally told him what I was thinking, he kissed me. Every time I talk to him, he comes closer. He wants me to talk to him. And suddenly I hear Caroline's voice, calm and clear, as if she were sitting right next to me. "Don't think,"
Go. I look over my left shoulder, expecting to see her there, but the space is empty. I follow her instructions anyway. My mind messes with me, I say, talking in that unfiltered way he likes, not measuring my words, and not quite certain about what's coming out until I hear myself say it. I scratch the back of my neck hard 3 times, no longer caring if he notices. It's been happening as long as I can remember. I can't turn off my thoughts. I can't sleep without being drugged into it. My mind just never stops working. I was diagnosed with OCD when I was 11. I've been on anti-anxiety medication ever since. I have this amazing psychiatrist named Sue, who is like my lifeline, and I see her every Wednesday afternoon. This is harder than I expected. I take a moment to gather my thoughts, looking around at his posters and his messy desk. I see his clipboard on the floor next to his guitar, and together they seem to calm me. I shake out my hands. For a long time, my friendship with the AIDS has been challenging for me. So when school started, Sue and I decided to channel my energy into positive things, like my swimming, I say. That's been good. Then I met Caroline, and that was really good. And then I found Poets' Corner and started writing poetry, and met a bunch of amazing people. And then there was you. And I felt healthy for the first time in years. I thought I was getting better. But as it turns out, I was getting worse. I study his body language like I do with Sue each week, watching the way he moves in direct correlation to the words I say. It's slight, almost imperceptible, but I notice when he props his hand on his bed and leans in a tiny bit closer to me. Let your guard down. Caroline was my friend, I say as the tears slide down my cheeks. And now she's gone, and I can't quite decide how I'm supposed to feel about that. I'm embarrassed I made her up in the first place, but I'm also so sad that she's not part of my life anymore. Keep talking. But when I was downstairs this afternoon, I realized something. I don't regret bringing her to life, not even for a second. Because she's this better part of me, you know? She speaks her mind, and she doesn't care what people think about her. I've always been too scared to be that person. But that's who I want to be all the time, not only when I'm alone with you, and not just on Monday and Thursday afternoons during lunch. I can tell I'm rambling, but I can't stop now. I'm letting the words tumble out of my mouth, still wishing he'd touch me, hug me, kiss me, do something, anything, to make me stop talking. But he doesn't speak, and he doesn't move. He just listens. It was as if she knew it was time for me to tap into this better person. So she showed me where to find you. All of you. These 7 amazing people who seem to know how to pull her out of me. Sam, he says, and before I can interpret the tone in his voice, he closes the distance, and finally I feel his thumbs on my cheeks. He rests his forehead against mine, just like he did that night in the pool. And I wait for him to kiss me, but he doesn't. Keep going. I'm sorry I didn't tell you about me. I should have, but all my life I've just wanted to be normal. You made me feel like I was. I was afraid that if I told you, I wouldn't feel normal anymore. He laughs.
I made you feel normal? You do realize I'm pretty far from normal, right?
I don't care. I say, brushing my lips against his. I like you too much, remember? I kiss his dimple first, and then I cover his mouth with mine, kissing him, thinking about how perfect he is. Maybe not in every way, but in every way I need him to be. And I'm so relieved when he kisses me back. I feel the thoughts that have haunted me for the last 4 days pop like bubbles, disappearing into the air one by one.
I like you too much, too, he says.
Still? I ask.
Still, he says with a huge smile on his face. Way, way too much.
After that, we stop talking.
stitched into me. Emily pats the spot next to her and I sit down. I steal a quick glimpse over my shoulder at the couch Caroline and I sat on during the PM last Thursday night, but I don't expect her to be there. Cameron's got the whole thing to himself today.
We missed you on Monday, she says. Everything okay?
Yeah. I see AJ taking his usual seat on the orange couch. He catches me looking at him. It wasn't, but it is now. I reach down for my yellow notebook and set it on the cushion next to me. Emily's holding a napkin in her hand, presumably for today's reading. How's your mom? I ask. She doesn't look at me.
She came home last weekend.
That's great, I say enthusiastically. But Emily shakes her head as she twists the napkin around one finger.
Hospice, she says, and I feel a pit form deep in my stomach. Oh, Emily, I'm so sorry. My dad made it sound like a big event, as if her coming home was a good thing. But come on, like I don't know what fucking hospice is.
She tucks one leg under the other and turns toward me. The entire living room has been transformed, and now it looks nothing like the one she decorated, and there are machines everywhere. That horrible bed is smack in the middle of the window, like she's on display for the whole neighborhood or something. But it's a good thing, right? She says sarcastically. Because now she can see our front yard during the day. Emily rests her elbow on the back of the couch, props her head in her hand and keeps talking. I pretended to be happy because I know it means a lot to my dad, but now coming home from school every day is absolute torture. As soon as she says it, her eyes grow wide and her whole face turns bright red. She covers her mouth.
That sounded so horrible, I shouldn't have said that.
I picture that cute house she lives in, with the cheery paint and the rope swing, knowing that's what her mom is staring at all day. And I can't imagine how excruciating it must be, for Emily to walk through that blue door and see her mom lying there, slowly dying. Emily turns away from me, shaking her head in disgust.
Jesus, what kind of person says that about her own mother?
I've said those same what-kind-of-person words myself. They're especially damaging, the kind of thing that can make a thought spiral tornado unexpectedly change course, shifting into an entirely new and even more destructive direction. My mom and Sue always have words that help, so I say them to Emily. A good person, I tell her. She catches my eye and gives me a trace of a smile. Someone who loves her mom and doesn't want to see her in so much pain. She blows out a big breath like she's air-drying her face.
Thank you, she whispers toward the ceiling.
The idea comes out of nowhere, and before I give it a second thought, I start blurting. Come over to my house after school today. We can talk or write, or listen to music and not talk and not write, and not think about anything bad at all.
I don't know, she says, looking down at the floor, picking at her fingernails. My dad likes me to come straight home after school.
I point at the phone next to her hip, screen facing up like it always is. He'll call if he needs you. I can have you there in 10 minutes. Emily looks like she's considering it. You can even stay for dinner if you want to. My mom's a horrible cook, so you'll have to pretend to like the food, but my dad is, like, the king of small talk, and my little sister can be kind of funny. I force myself to shut up, because I can't tell if all this family talk is making Emily feel better or worse. But then she looks over at me and says,
That sounds nice, and...
She pauses for a moment as if she's searching for the right word.
Normal.
Normal.
She's right. It does sound normal. My life might not be perfect, and my brain might play tricks on me, and I might be overwhelmed by my own thoughts. But now that I think about it, I'm lucky to have as much normal as I do.
I look at Emily, wondering if I could do for her what Caroline did for me. Wondering if I could pay it forward. I'll gauge it, but if she comes over today and it seems like she wants to talk, I'll ask her questions and listen. Really listen, like Caroline listened to me, and keep her talking until she has nothing left to say. If she wants to, I'll help her write a happy poem about her mom,
something positive, something she can read to her. And if the moment feels right and she wants a change of subject, I'll tell her my secrets. I'll let her in on my OCD and Shrink Sue and Caroline and the number 3, and I'll talk until she knows everything. Does she see it in my eyes right now, how much I want to be her friend? Because something shifts in her expression, and her whole face lights up, more than I've ever seen it do before. Actually, I'd love that, she says.
Okay, who's up first?
AJ asks from his spot in the front of the room. I look around. Sydney's got a wrapper in her hands, but aside from doing a little dance in her seat, she doesn't move. Emily is still holding her napkin, but she doesn't look ready to go yet. Jessica and Cameron are holding papers in their hands, too, but they don't stand up and head for the stage, either. I'll go, I say, and before I can think too much about it, I'm standing up, walking to the stage, sitting on the stool. I open my notebook to the right page. I wrote this on Tuesday in... As soon as I speak, my mouth goes dry. I take a deep breath, close my notebook on my lap, and look out into the group, letting my gaze settle on each one of them. I remember the first time I sat up here, staring at these total strangers, feeling terrified about how much of myself I was about to expose. Things are different now. I went through something last weekend, I say, and it made me realize it was no mistake that I wandered down here one day and found all of you. So before I read this poem, I just want to say thank you for letting me stay, even though I probably didn't deserve it and some of you didn't think I belonged. My notebook is still closed on my lap. I don't open it. I don't need to. I know these words by heart. I wrote this in Poet's Corner. I bring my left hand to my shoulder, exactly where Caroline's was the first time I sat on this stool and read aloud. My eyes fall shut. You're still here, stitched into me like threads in a sweater, feeding me words that break me down and piece me back together all at once. Tightening your grip, reminding me that I'm not alone. I never was. None of us ever are. You are still here, stitched into the words on these walls. Every last one. The room is completely silent. Then everyone starts clapping and whistling, and I open my eyes to find AJ standing up, glue stick ready to launch. I give him one of his trademark chin tilts and he sends it flying. I catch it in midair. It feels good to rip this poem out of the notebook, and even better to cover the paper with glue. I march to the back of the room, and I find a sliver of empty space on the wall near the hidden door. Thank you, Caroline, I whisper as I bring the page to my lips. Then I press it against the wall, running my hand over the words, securing them in place. Back on stage, Sydney clears her throat dramatically.
Most of you have already heard this tasty treat, but since some of you missed it because you were dealing with car trouble, she says with air quotes, locking eyes with AJ, then with me, I thought I'd read it again. I sit next to AJ this time, and he wraps his arms around my waist. I recline against his chest, and he rests his chin on my shoulder. Sydney unfolds a paper In-N-Out hat and positions it on her head. Then she launches into a dramatic reading about the secret menu. She praises the Flying Dutchman and the 2x4, makes us hungry with her descriptions of special sauces and spices and grilled onions, and leaves us mystified about the people who order cold cheese. When she finishes her poem, she passes out paper In-N-Out hats to all of us. We're all still wearing them as we file out the door. Everyone heads into the hallway, but AJ hangs back. What's the matter? I ask him.
Your call, but I'm wondering if that poem of yours is in the right home.
He hands me a glue stick. He has a point. I step back inside, remove the page from the wall, and apply a fresh coat of glue to the back. Then I walk over to Caroline's corner and find a new spot, right next to her collection.
Much better,
he says as he anchors my hat on my head. AJ grabs my hand and leads me up the stairs, back into the real world. That's the thing. My legs feel wobbly, and I'm sure everyone is staring at me as I cross the cafeteria. Alexis and Caitlin are on one side of the table. Haley and Olivia are on the other. Alexis sees me first. She elbows Caitlin and whispers something in her ear. I keep taking brave steps across the room, Sue's voice in my head, reminding me to hold on to the people who make me stronger and better, and let go of the ones who don't. Holding on to the poets was easy. Letting go of the aides is already proving to be harder than I expected. Can I talk to you guys? I'm asking all of them, but for some reason I direct the question to Alexis. Of course, she replies, scooting down, making room next to her. Where have you been? We haven't seen you all week. We were worried, Caitlin says. I must look skeptical because she adds, Really, we were. In fact, I went to your locker a bunch of times looking for you. Why? I ask. I wanted to apologize. I'm still not sure I believe her. If she wanted to apologize so badly, she could have tried a lot harder to find me. She hasn't texted me once in 7 days. I catch Haley giving her a stern look. Caitlin sits up straighter and leans in closer to me. I'm glad you're here, because I've been meaning to talk to you. What I said last week wasn't funny. I was out of line, and I'm sorry. I hope you'll accept my apology, Sam. Wait, did she call me Sam? I look at Haley's smug expression, thinking about the conversation we had in my room last Sunday, and I start to realize what's happening. Haley's been rallying for me from the inside. She doesn't want me to leave. She's convinced them to apologize and start calling me Sam from now on. Then this will all be over, and everything can go back to the way it was. Am I really such a great friend that they can't stand to lose me? Or are they merely trying to save face? I'd like to think it's the former, that I've been overreacting all these years, and they really are true friends who love me for exactly who I am. But I'm not completely sure. Caitlin takes a sip of her soda and then turns to Alexis. Did you tell her about this weekend? Alexis looks around to be sure no one can hear her, and then she rests her forearms on the table and lowers her voice. My parents are going out of town. I can't have another party, because if they catch me again, they'll take my car away. So we're keeping it small. All the guys are coming over, Olivia pipes in, pointing around the cafeteria as she identifies them. Travis, Jeremy, Kurt, we still need someone for Haley, and you can bring AJ, okay? So we can get to know him better. I'm tempted. I don't want to be, but I am. I've been mentally preparing myself to part ways with the aides all week, but now I'm not so sure I want to leave them behind so completely. Maybe I was wrong. Maybe I can have both. Now that I think about it, AJ might like being pulled into my circle. I've never even asked him. I picture all of us sitting around Alexis's living room, talking late into the night, everyone getting to know the side of AJ most people don't get to see and... Wait, what did Olivia just say? I turn back to Caitlin. You're seeing Kurt? For a split second she looks a little embarrassed, but she quickly recovers. She cocks her head to one side. Yeah, we sort of bumped into each other at a party last weekend and got back together. Got back together? I'd hardly call making out with my boyfriend in a coat check room while I was 50 feet away together. But I'm glad she told me. For a minute, I almost forgot why I came over here today. I need to say something to you guys. The mood shifts instantly. Alexis folds her arms across her chest. Caitlin stares at me, eyebrows raised. Olivia bites her lip and fixes her gaze on the table. Haley brings her hand to her forehead. We've been best friends since we were little kids, and there are so many reasons for that. We've always had so much fun together. All of my very best memories include you guys. I'm speaking slowly and clearly, exactly the way Sue coached me. I feel my hands shaking, but I take a deep breath and keep talking. But we've also changed a lot over the years, and I think that's a good thing. I think we're supposed to change, and when we do, that has to be okay. I've changed over the last few months, and I like the person I'm becoming.
And who is that? Olivia asks.
That's the thing, I say with a shrug. I'm not sure. The truth is, I don't really know who I am without you guys. But I think I need to find out.
It doesn't come out exactly the way Sue and I practiced, but it's close, and I followed all the rules. I intentionally don't mention AJ or any of my other friends downstairs, and I'm careful with my words so they don't think I'm blaming them or anything. We're growing apart. It's time to part ways.
Did your new boyfriend put you up to this? Olivia asks. He sounds a little possessive, Caitlin says to her, as if I'm not sitting right here.
Stop it, Haley interjects. Now! I feel her hand on my shoulder, and it catches me completely off guard. I'm not doing this, not again.
I know what she means, we all do. She's not going to let them treat me the way we all treated Sarah. And I realize that no matter what happens today, Haley now knows which side she's on, and it's mine.
She's right, Alexis says. You're our friend, we love you. You should do what makes you happy.
Caitlin raises her eyebrows. Olivia won't look at me. Haley still has her hand on my shoulder. Alexis is smiling at me, and it looks genuine. I'm still trying to get my head around this whole thing. I'm having a hard time believing those words just came out of Alexis's mouth, but she sounds sincere. Maybe it's a game. Maybe I'm about to be the punchline of some big joke, or the focal point of some nasty piece of gossip. Even if I am, I can't do anything about it anyway. I give Haley's hand a grateful squeeze as I stand up. I'll see you guys later. I walk through the cafeteria doors, leaving my friends behind, feeling all the pain of letting them go, and knowing I did the right thing.
The first time.
How are you today, Sam? Colleen stands up from behind the counter as I open the door. She used to practically sing her It Must Be Wednesday line, but today I get the same awkward greeting I got last week, her voice dropping into a lower octave when she says my name, her lips pursed sympathetically while she waits for my reply. I tell her I'm fine. I've already apologized for bursting in here that day, and she insisted I had nothing to be sorry for, that she'd already forgotten all about it. Clearly she hasn't.
She's waiting for you. Go on in.
I was kind of hoping Sue would suggest moving our meeting to her backyard oasis, where we could talk in comfortable chairs around a fountain and among flowers, but no such luck. When I step into her office, she stands up from behind her desk and crosses the room to meet me halfway.
Wow, you look different today, she says, beaming at me.
Do I? I ask like I don't know what she's talking about. But I do. I'm wearing jeans and a plain long-sleeve t-shirt. My hair is long and straight, but I didn't flat iron it or anything. And I'm hardly wearing any makeup, just a light bit of foundation, some blush and mascara. I've been scaling back over the last few weeks. This feels more like me. And I have an extra hour to sleep now. If it weren't for the holiday decorations all over town and the fact that I have to cook Christmas dinner for 20 people next week, I'd swear it was the middle of July, she says. You look relaxed and happy. Like summer, Sam. I'm not sure how to explain it, but I don't feel like summer, Sam. I'm more relaxed, happier than she ever was, because even in July I was dreading August and finding it hard to be truly happy when the sand was flowing into the bottom half of the hourglass and there was nothing I could do to stop it. Summer, Sam, was always. I pause, searching for the right word, and settle on temporary. But this feels pretty permanent. Sue smiles. I registered for the advanced swim program today. 5 a.m. practices every morning. I roll my eyes. But year-round meets, a chance to swim at junior nationals, and a much better shot at a scholarship. Now she's beaming.
Well, that's certainly cause for celebration.
Sue glides over to the mini-fridge and removes a bottle of sparkling apple cider. She pours it into two plastic champagne flutes and returns, handing one to me.
To Sam, she says.